so it's quiet.
Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Sports Conversation. I'm Don Henderson. We have our normal reporters all around the country who will be chatting with you during this 2-hour program. Frank Carlos, our executive producer, as always, and we look forward to an interesting and a very interesting and great show for you tonight. Roy Cummings, obviously, is in Tampa. Roger Hendler is in Atlanta, and Frank Carroll, our executive producer, is behind the dial. So, Frank, got dedication before we start off.
Yes, I do, Don. At exactly 11:15, this date, 60 years ago, I became the happiest man in the world. My wife and I were married by the Most Reverend Monsignor John Carroll, my uncle, while my other uncle, the Bishop Gerald Vincent McDevitt, sat there and I just smiled. But he never thought that anybody would tag me, but... After 60 years, I got to dedicate the program to my wife, my stalwart, and actually even my nurse and for the last year. So just want to let everybody know that she's a great guy, great person.
Great shout out to you, Brian. No question about that. And let's start off with baseball. The Phillies had a very, very tough afternoon. Got ahead 18-4 and lost the ball game by the score of 10-0 to the Houston Astros. And, of course, they're on the verge of Atlanta. We'll talk to Roger about that in just a moment. They're on the verge of now having the Atlanta Braves come in. 5.5 games back in the National League East as the night continues. And so we'll start off a little bit with baseball. Roy, as you indicated last week, we're down to the right kind of days where every pitch, every game counts.
Yes, it does. And especially for teams like, out on the fringe, a couple of teams making some interesting noise right now are the Cubs and the Tigers. Look, I don't think either one has it in them to jump over the teams they have to jump over. But you're talking about two teams that have gotten above the 500 mark, and that shouldn't be a great accomplishment anymore. But it's enough to get you in the conversation in the playoffs these days. And, so there's that to watch as well. The Cubs today had in them what the Phillies didn't, the ability to come back from a big deficit, down 7 runs at one point late in the game, and came back and rallied to win themselves. And, unfortunately, the Phillies couldn't. But you know what I think we've learned about the Phillies is that they are quite a streaky team. I mean,
hold just a second. I think we got Roger in that ballpark in Atlanta. We got to get that. Conversation on top. Okay, go ahead.
Listen, I want to tell you first of all, let's talk about Saquon. Okay, he's got to go. There's no doubt about it. He is a detriment to the Phillies. He's a disgrace. He is the subject of all over on Sports Talk Radio in Philly. He has got to go. He's a bum. And why they ever signed him to that contract, he's never produced. He's either on the IL, and he's a joke. And he was the one that lost that game today. They sent down the Allard. Who was 2-0 and had a great ERA and was doing a great job. And all of a sudden, now because they wanted to give Tyquan Walker another shot. Okay, he had his shot. Get rid of him one way or another.
Well, they talked about that on the postgame show today. And, of course, they expect him either to be sent out of the bullpen or released. We'll just have to wait for a couple of days to see what Philly management decides to do. But he had a good year last year, but he hasn't been able to do anything positive this year. And going back to what Roy just said a minute ago, you can't afford to start pitchers like Tyrone who gave up so many runs in the fourth inning. You really don't have a chance to come back and win the game. So you're right in that sense, Roger. I don't know what they're waiting for. I imagine in the next 24 hours we'll all find out. But that was a surprise starter, Roy, today for the Phillies.
Exactly, Don, because they've got to make a decision. They gave this guy another shot, and he blew it. He just doesn't have it. I don't know if he ever had it since he's been with the Phillies. You know, they didn't use him in the postseason 2 years ago. He was in the dugout, like, the whole time. They can't use him as a relief pitcher. He is not a relief pitcher. So, what are you going to do? I mean,
still got $29 million coming on that contract for the next 3 years.
I know. I would put him on the IL and let him go, let him stay there. Okay. And bring Allard up. And that way they can, he's still getting paid. They don't have to release him. You know, maybe next year he'd be better. I don't know. But I think they've got to make a decision on this guy, and it's got to be to get rid of him.
Roy, has the Cubs, now we talk about the Mets too, because they've been trying now for the last 2.5 weeks. They've been climbing up to one game behind one game behind getting into the playoffs, 2 games behind getting into the playoffs. They're making this trip now that has sort of hurt them a little bit. But they're another club. You mentioned the Cubs. You mentioned a moment ago. And, of course, you got to throw the Mets in that package too.
I'll be all right. Yeah, the Mets are a team that, look, there's at least, 10 teams that you can follow right now. And look, we've said this before. We're all traditionalists. I think we all, have a little bit of a pang in our hearts for the way that baseball used to be with just the division champions getting to the playoffs. But, you know, the wild card situation, even doubling down on that, has really created a lot of excitement for a lot of teams. And you know what? It's a bit of a tournament now. And, we've seen over the last few years that you don't have to be a division champion to necessarily get into to get to the World Series. I mean, Arizona certainly wasn't. And, you know, they're hot right now as well. And so the Mets are a team that you have to watch. There's plenty of teams out there you have to watch. And the thing about Philly is, you know, the Phillies guys, you can say what you want about Taijuan Walker. He may not have, lived up to the expectations this year, and even if the expectations weren't great, which I doubt that they were, but it's a streaky team. You know, they win four in a row, as they just did before today, and, you know, before that they lose, you know, five out of six or four out of five, and they're
right.
Really streaky. And that's the thing that, you know, I think it doesn't matter what your personnel is at this point. And look, the thing about Taijuan Walker is, you know, they've had opportunities to get some pitchers, you know, off the waiver wire. Drew Smyly was out there a couple days ago, and nobody touched him. So it must be the contract that's keeping them from making a move there, I would think. Either that, or they think that he's still got something that they can, you know, benefit from. But we'll see. And, but at the end of the day, they've got to figure out a way to be a little bit more consistent, because, you know, they do have these runs where they're fine, and they're not going to lose the division. That's highly unlikely. They'll win the division, but, you know, if they get to the playoffs and they happen to be in one of these slumps, you know, where they go four or five games and they can't win, well, they could get knocked out pretty early, and it's a team that clearly has the ability to go deep into the playoffs. So that's the thing they have to correct. And, I think in a situation like that, you probably want as many veteran arms as you can get, and that's probably why they're going to keep Taijuan Walker around. You're not in a position really this late in the season to just go dump arms. You can move them out of the rotation. You can certainly move them off your put them down in the minors, but you're going to have to keep them on your 40-man roster because you need the arm. You can't hurt yourself there because you just don't know what's going to happen next. So you got to keep the arm, but at the end of the day, you know, it's a team thing, and it's a very streaky team.
Yeah, but Roy,
that's what
I don't think
Rob Thompson talked about on a post-game show today. He spent a great deal of time complimenting Walker on all the work that he's done, both on the injured list as well as off, you know, trying to get himself back into a winning situation, just hasn't been able to do it. But he also said that even though he would pitch so poorly going into that fourth inning, that he wanted to keep going out there to save the bullpen. He wasn't worried about what his ERA was at that point. He was worried about trying to save the bullpen. And as Rob Thompson said, you know, right now their bullpen's strapped. So, they left them in a lot longer than they wanted to, Roger.
Well, here's what happened. Jose Alvarado left for personal reasons. They don't know if he's coming back this season. I have no idea what the personal reasons are. He's had a lot of psychological issues. He hasn't been able to be consistent. And do you remember when Lane, right tackle for the Eagles, do you remember when he took time off during the season for emotional issues and a couple of years ago? And I think that is probably what Alvarado's problem is, something like that. But he left, and they don't know when he's coming back, and now they have two left-handers in the bullpen. But, Roy, you cannot send Taijuan Walker to the minors because he'll pass on that right away because of his time in the big leagues.
He doesn't have an option to pass. If they want to send him to the minors, he can go to the minors. He's not a 10-5 guy. He doesn't have any rights over that. Yeah, if they want to send him to the minors, he goes to the minors, or he can elect free agency if he, you know, at some point. So he doesn't really have much of an option there. And again, who are we talking about here, guys? We're talking about Taiwan Walker. It's been pretty well established in this phone call already that, you know, we're not talking about an all-star caliber pitcher here. We're talking about a guy who's with what? Fourth organization in the last 5 years or so, and at one point was quite a prospect, but never really lived up to the expectations at any point. And the expectations, as I said before, are not very high right now. So, you know, I don't think they're going to move him. And if I know if you're upset about what he did today, you know, Don just pointed it out. Sometimes starting pitchers just have to go out there and just take the beating. If they don't have it today, maybe they haven't had it for weeks. That could be the case, but. You put him out there, and your bullpen needs a break, and that was the case today. So sometimes you just got to suck it up as a starter, and go throw your hundred pitches, and hope for the best, you know. It's unfortunate, but again, it's settled down. It's one game. You've got a 6-game lead. You're going to win the division. No, Roy, it's more than one game.
It's been a number
Relax,
of games.
Roger.
That's the
it's
whole
one
issue
game.
With him.
It's one
no, it's
game.
Not.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
It's one game. You've got a 6-run lead
record.
On the Braves. I'm looking at the record. It's one of the best in baseball. You're going to get to the playoffs.
No, I'm looking at Taiwan Walker's record. That's what I'm looking
don't
at.
Don't worry about Taiwan Walker's record. He's probably not. He's not. It's highly unlikely that he's going to be in the rotation come playoff time. You've got better.
Rotation? He's not going to be on the team in 48 hours.
No. That's exactly right. You're looking at the team. You're not looking at him. They look for him to win today. That's what they're looking at because they're in a race to be number one and they get a bye. That's what they're looking at.
They're going to get
and
their
he
bye.
Has been, they're looking to have the best record in the National League. That's what they're
okay,
looking
great.
At.
You're not going to win. You're not going to win in the last 32 games. You're not going to win them all. I understand they want
to
win
that,
today.
I know that, Roy. I know that. Okay. I'm not going to argue with you. I just know what the situation is with Taiwan Walker. It's been every game he takes them out of it. They were looking for him to come through today and win the game. That's why they gave him a
shot.
Why
would they be looking for him to come through today if every game has been a disaster, which, you know, it all with all due respect, it has been. Yes, he has not pitched up to expectations, but that's been the case for the last, what, 8-9 starts. He hasn't had a good start in a month and a half. So – I'm looking at so why would they expect him today to come out and come through for them against
because
Houston?
Because the coaches and well they beat Houston in two out of three.
So what?
Forget about it. I'm not going to argue. If you look at what's going on and you look at every game of Taiwan Walker, he's been a disaster, and that's exactly what everybody's upset about. They sent Allard to the Mariners. We're not going to solve it.
Why would the Phillies expect him to win today if he's been a disaster in every start over the last month and a half? They need somebody to eat innings, that's why.
They need somebody to eat innings.
Yes. Thank you, Don. There you go. He had a job to do today. Sure, winning is a big part of it. But more than anything else, he had to go out there and just pitch the best he could. And right now it's not good enough. Look, you can bring Allard up. Look, the roster's going to expand here in a couple of days. You're not that far away from him probably being completely sidelined. So I'm sure they'll bring up Allard, but Abel's not capable, so they can't bring him up, it seems. So, you know, they're a little bit strapped in terms of starting pitching.
Right, right. All right, fellas, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's switch gears because we talked that one out. And we got a lot of noise behind you there, Roger. I don't know what the PA announcer is doing or what that noise is, but, man, it's loud. All right, let's go.
I'll just jump off, okay? You guys have a great evening, okay? You know, I know what I'm talking about. Roy's challenging. He's not as close as I've been where I track it every day.
Well, don't ask me about the Phillies then. Then don't ask me about the Phillies.
No, we're asking your opinion, but I have an opinion too.
No,
that's
apparently
all.
You don't want to hear my opinion. I gave you my opinion. You didn't like it. And now you want to jump off the call.
Because I hurt your feelings.
No.
I'm sorry. We're
you
in agreement.
You didn't hurt my feelings.
Taiwan Walker's
you
not, doing, not doing a good job. But the Phillies expecting him to win today, that's not smart. And I'm also telling you, you got a 5.5 game lead on the next team in the division. You'll win the division. It's up to you. It's up to the whether you can beat the Dodgers or not. Who knows? But you'll be in the playoffs, and he probably won't be a part of the rotation.
I'm going to my.
Let's face it. The Astros roster came into Philadelphia red hot. The Phillies calmed the Astros down. They came in what they had won like 8-9 straight games on the road. And they came into Philadelphia. Philadelphia slowed them down. They didn't slow them down today, but they did slow them down in the series. So let's switch over. Oh man, I can't stand that noise. Let's switch to the National Football League because we got games. The 53-man roster was run out, and let's start off with you down there, Roger, because you're right on top of what's going on with the Buccaneers and. I know you feel that they're a solid contender with Atlanta in the South. You think they're even a little bit of a favorite over Atlanta as we talked earlier. What do you think now that they're down to the 53-man roster and ready to go?
Well, let's go to Roy and see what he thinks about Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I thought all along that I still think Tampa is the best team in the division. You know, Atlanta's going to give them some run. But you know what? I just look, new quarterback, new offensive scheme, new head coach. Those things tend to not always, you know, work out in favor for a team the first year around. Now, look, Tampa's got a new offensive scheme as well, a new offensive coordinator, but the personnel everywhere else is the same. The defense is the same. Head coach is the same. Everything else is the same. And I, at this point in their careers, I'll take Baker Mayfield over Kirk Cousins. And, you know, I just think he's the better quarterback of the two. I think the receiving core is better in Tampa. I think the running back core is, you know, is something that people are kind of overlooking. But, look, I give Atlanta a lot of credit. They've done a great job, I think, this offseason in preparing themselves to take a big step forward. A lot of people like them. I understand why, but I still don't think they're quite as good as Tampa. We'll see. But it's one of the, to me, it's one of the more intriguing battles in the NFL, that battle for the top spot in the NFC South. It may not be as sexy as what you see in the NFC East or even the NFC West or a couple of other divisions over in the AFC, but that could be a knockdown drag out if things go the way everybody expects them to. And now that they're down to the 53, look, one thing that you had in Tampa was you didn't have a whole lot of questions as to who was going to make it. It was more about who's going to be on the practice squad and who they're going to try to bring up, you know, when injuries hit. Because the 53, they had 51 or 52 of them pretty much set before they even went into camp. So, and they're coming out healthy. They'll start the season healthy, barring anything that happens in practice. And so feel good about Tampa going forward. I still think they're the best team in the division. I think it's a team that Atlanta's going to have to chase down.
Roger, just the opposite. Atlanta continues to make some moves, and everybody is looking, I think going right back to what Roy said, everybody's looking at the quarterback and deciding that that's why Atlanta is going to be a better team than the Buccaneers are, because their quarterback's going to do a better job this year than Mayfield did, not last year, but is he going to be able to duplicate what he did last year? This year, your thoughts. Roger, still there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. We've seen one-year wonders, Don, okay? And I'm not going to tell you that I think that Baker Mayfield won't have another good year like last year. I won't. But the other thing is the 53-man roster, that's today, okay? By Saturday, that could all change. It's you know how it is up until the first game. And the first game, you know, for the the first game is the Eagles-Packers down in São Paulo, Brazil. But, I mean, the first weekend is a week and a half away. And I think the 53-man roster will change quite a bit between now and then. If history repeats itself like it has for years and years and years, it sure will.
Well, looking at the exhibition games that we've seen so far, we talked to Billy Wendell last week about this, and, you know, I don't call them preseason games. Billy's right. I still don't call them exhibition games. But I'll tell you, I haven't seen too many really good things, Roy. I mean, I watched a lot of games in the last 10 days on Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday, whatever. I've seen a lot of games. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, and when you talk about the NFC East, I mean, the Giants look terrible. The Dallas Cowboys, you know what the hell they're doing. And I don't know. What's your thought?
Well, I don't disagree with you at all. It's really a horrible, horrible product that the NFL trots out there during the preseason. And as you say, the exhibition season, and that's what they are. They're exhibitions of football, and they're not very good. That's for sure. But, you know, the other thing you got to keep in mind is that 75% of the players that you see in those games, the players you get, and the players who are getting about 90% of the snaps, are all out on the street right now. You know, with teams not having to know, there's no longer a paring down of the rosters. You know, you go from 90 to 53 in a snap. So, you know, teams are taking those opportunities in those exhibition games now to do more, you know, gauging of what they've got, you know, in the depth chart more than anything else. They're looking at their third and fourth string players. And,
right.
You know, and nobody wants to show anything, so there's no real strategy involved. It's really just kind of guys out there just playing up to their athletic abilities and, you know, for that particular moment. And let's not forget, you know, in a lot of other situations, teams are coming off two or three days of facing this very same team that they're playing in a game in practices where, you know, and on both sides of the field, the coaches are more concerned about the tape they put on, you know, they put together in practice than they are in the games. I know the last Buccaneers game, there was some fatigue involved because so much had been done in the 3 days prior, you know, in terms of scrimmages and live drills and that kind of thing, that by the time they got to the game, there was some fatigue involved in it, and that, you know, played a factor as well. So, and again, you know, keep in mind, these most of these guys that you see in the exhibition games, they're players who really, maybe you could argue they're not NFL caliber, you know, that they don't belong there because, you know, they're just getting a look and trying to put some tape on to see if somebody else can, you know, is interested in taking a shot at them. So, again, the product is really bad. It's not worth looking at, but you know, if you're, involved in what we are in, you know, if you're a reporter, if you're, you know, if you got any kind of a podcast or anything like that, if you're, you know, producing content for anyone, you feel like you got to watch it because, you know, you just kind of got to know what each team has. And, you know, it doesn't make for great football.
Roger, you had a chance to watch. You've been so busy going back and forth between Philadelphia for the Hall of Fame weekend last weekend. And have you seen Atlanta play at all? Because I know you were very encouraged about what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I saw them play a couple of times, you know, in their local telecast. And not the entire game, but, you know, I was impressed. But then again, as Roy and you and of course, Frank Reese, too, I mean, it's not quality football. For instance, the Eagles had the guy, Will, I forget his name, and he was brought in as the fourth quarterback, and it was only because he knows the system for the new offensive coordinator because he was with them in Dallas. I guess he must have been the third quarterback at Dallas behind Dak and whomever. So he was let go quick, and it was strictly to get him. He played some. But it was just so the other quarterbacks could learn the system. And that's what you're going to see. Now, there was one wideout that they were talking about the other night on WIP, and they're really afraid to put him on waivers because he's going to be picked up really quick. And, of course, they made a deal for another wideout. So it's just a very transitional period. And things will not settle down until next week, in my opinion.
Well, as Billy said last week, they made the deal with the Penn State wide receiver who was not having a great relationship with his coach down there in Washington, and therefore they, surprisingly, because he was, what, the 16th pick in the first round, I think was Moment Sure was 16, and they traded him to the Eagles for not a lot, and he was going to fit in as the third receiver to give them some depth and also work out of the slot. The one thing that we continue to go back to are the Chiefs. And Roy, that's not the way they operate. They play players, you know, during the exhibition season. They play players. They want to be ready for the first game. And I just have to think that's not too bad an idea. I mean, that guy keeps winning. There's a reason he keeps winning, because he does things the right way.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all there, and it is an interesting approach that they take. I mean, those guys, you're right, they play. And other teams, it seems like, you know, they're afraid to put those guys out there, afraid to get them hurt. And look, I understand. This is a league where it's not, you know, whether you're going to get hurt, it's when you're going to get hurt. And that's something you have to guard against. You know, but look, the Chiefs, yeah, they take it a little bit different approach. And I think it's one of the reasons sometimes you have some, you know, some teams go into the regular season and they just don't, you know, they're not quite ready. Because, again, you know, some of these guys, it's their first snaps in anger. I mean,
right.
And you just, you know, that's a situation that you kind of got to build yourself up to. And, you know, you're going to go now from, every team is going to go now from having spent, you know, at least a few days in workouts against another team or a game, you know, had a few snaps against another team to 10, 12, 14 days, as Rogers pointed out, where everybody's gearing up for that first game. And, you know, we're still, what, 8 days away from the first real game. And that's, you know, that's quite a period of time where guys just, you know, they're not ready. And all of a sudden at the NFL level where the speed of the game is so great, you know, I think it helps to get these guys out there and get them in some real snaps and let them play at a, you know, at a live pace for a little bit so that they're used to it. But, you know, most teams don't look at it that way. And maybe that's why Kansas City continues to be the elite team in the league right now.
Hold it. We'll let us sit it right there for this week. You guys had a chance to go back and forth. Well, we're just out of time. Doug Fernandez is ready to go. Roy, thank you very, very much. Always a pleasure. We'll get together next
week.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Love you, Roger.
Same here.
Doug Fernandez
is
on now.
Don, let me just say this, okay, about following up with Roy before we get to Doug. I covered the Eagles the entire Andy Reid tenure in Philadelphia, as you know. He did that when he was with the Eagles, and he does it with the Chiefs. He takes them out away from the practice facilities, just like he did at Lehigh. So just like I've said in the past, I don't get why teams do not follow that lead when he's had so much success and they don't do it the way he does. There you go.
Well, then we won't change gears. We'll let Doug Fernandez comment on as well. Doug, a super columnist for the Herald Tribune, and has been there for many, many years, and great friend of the program, great friend of ours. And, Doug, great to have you back with us. And what do you think about these exhibition games that they like to call whatever they call them?
Well, I mean, when I used to cover the Bucks way back when, they used to play 6 exhibition games a year. Preseason, and it was like a mini season itself, and then they went down to 4, and now they have the current. Listen, you need, and they practice all the time, they practice every day, but you need to face games against other teams where you really can judge what you have on your team. You know, it's one thing to have your guys go against your own guys, but that's no judge of a player's talent on whether he can play in this league. You really need to have him go against somebody else, actual game conditions, and see how he acquits himself. So, yeah, you'd have to have some preseason games. The thing is, you know, when a fan buys a season ticket package, he has to pay for those preseason games, even though he probably doesn't really want them, you know. But that's factored in. That jacks up the price. And I know a lot of people just give away their preseason tickets because they don't bother, you know, they're going to go see every game at home during the season. So they don't want to go see a preseason game where, you know, the starters are out by the second series and you have a bunch of guys who won't make the team anyway play. But you really do need one or two games to really gauge what you have. Practices, even when they practice against other teams, like the Patriots practiced against the Eagles last week for two or three days, and it was like a game situation, but they were practicing. You really need a game situation. I don't like exhibition games. And that name, the NFL does not like that name, exhibition, because it denotes that they're not really trying out there. It's just an exhibition of football. It's not the real thing. But, yeah, I mean, the real season is upon us, and my Patriots are going to be one of the worst teams in football.
Roger?
Okay, they're rebuilding. Yeah, let me, you know, Doug, I love that point because we feel that way about the exhibition games. And but, you know, I wonder, because I don't know the answer. Maybe you do, Don or Frank knows. You know, the Eagles game in Brazil against the Packers is a home game for the Eagles. And I'm just wondering whether the fans had to pay for 8 home games or 7 home games because of that game. And I don't know, but I've wondered about this, and I don't know if either any of you know.
I don't have a clue, Doug.
That's a good point, because the Patriots played last year over in London, and I don't know whether it was a home. They played the Dolphins. I don't know who the designated home team was, but you're right. I mean, if you're going to pay for a package of games and one of them is over in London, you know you're not going to go over there. I can't believe that would be factored into the price. I can't believe that you have to pay for a game you have no intention of going to. But I never really considered that.
Well, that's during the course of the week. We'll have to find out. We'll have to call somebody and find out. I never even thought about it, to be honest with you. But how can you charge them? They're not going to go to Brazil to see the Eagles play, that's for sure.
No.
I would tie it in to go Carnival, right? The big festival down there. Go see a game and then go dance in the streets for 5 days. I kind of like that idea.
That's good.
Well, Doug, your first evaluation of the Patriots was not very good, very succinct and quick. But how do you see things? Pick a division and go and tell me what you think.
Well, I think you're going to pick the Dolphins. The Dolphins have, and the Bills will be there. The Dolphins have emerged as the strongest team in that division. The Patriots held that honor for 20 years. You know, I didn't think the Patriots would fall off this quickly. You know, I knew they wouldn't have the success. No one has. No one will, that they had with Brady and Belichick for 20 years. You will never, ever see that, especially in free agency, because they were able to keep a lot of those guys together for some of those runs. But I don't think Belichick didn't draft well. You can just tell. He spent a fourth-round pick on a kicker that they just cut today, and they're going to keep a kicker that they got off the waiver wire. So that's a fourth-round draft pick that he wasted on a kicker that won't benefit the team. And he had too many of those picks when he was a general manager. He's a hell of a coach, but as a general manager, I think he's questionable. And a lot of his picks didn't pan out. So what you have is a team that went from Super Bowl contender every year to now one that they're picking to win 3 games. I didn't think they'd fall off this quickly. I thought they'd be like maybe 500, a mediocre team. I didn't think they'd go into the tank like this. And if you saw the game against Washington, their offensive line was dysfunctional. I've never heard a referee do this. They had the Patriots had three. Their left tackle was so scared of getting beat by the defensive end on the rush that he was back like 2 yards off the line of scrimmage, and you can't do that. He was flagged 3 times for the same penalty, and by the 3rd time, the referee said, "Once again." I've never heard a referee say once again like another penalty on the same guy, you know. But they were going to maybe start Drake May, their number one draft pick, but they can't. They cannot start him behind that line. It will be a Jim Plunkett situation all over again. He'll get sacked 50 times, and, you know, he may hurt himself. That's why they're going to start Brissett, who, you know, was drafted by the Patriots, has been around, and they're going to let him take the punishment because this offensive line, it's miserable. It really is scary to watch them play against Washington a couple nights ago.
Let me throw another one out. Roger, we'll go to you first, and then we'll get Doug's comment. I read the Post every day, and most of us all do. But, I mean, the Jets, Rodgers hasn't done anything. I mean, he hasn't even taken a snap. 39 years old. Last year, unfortunately, he got hurt after four plays. But I can't understand how they're all saying that he's going to step right in and he's going to be the Roger that we saw playing at Green Bay. I can't see how this is going to happen. Roger?
Well, we'll know in about a week and a half, okay, whether it's true or false. But, you know, Doug, just to get back to the Patriots, when the offensive line, I was always a Mac Jones fan. And I think that if he had had a good line or a fair or better than fair line, I think he wouldn't take in that punishment, because I really think he's better than he showed with New England. And that's just my opinion. I hope that he has a good career. But I'll tell you, we'll know about Rodgers pretty quick.
Well, you know,
what do you think, Doug?
He's weird. He's weird. He's a weird dude. I mean,
yeah, he is.
The way he acts. What he says, but listen, when he tore his Achilles last year, I remember he was talking about coming back that same season. I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no way you're going to come back from an Achilles in the same season. But listen, if he's healthy and he still has, it doesn't have to be the mobility he had 10, 15 years ago, but he's still clearly the best quarterback on the Jets roster. And those Jet fans up there, they go, you know, calling for a Super Bowl. It has to be with Rodgers as a quarterback if they're going to do anything. Who I don't even know who the Jets have at quarterback. Who do they have at quarterback now? I don't even know. Who's the quarterback?
I don't know.
But behind Rodgers.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean,
I don't know who the backup quarterback is.
They got rid of what's-his-face, right? The Kyle, what's-his-face, the guy they drafted. He's no longer there. They drafted Sam Darnell a couple of years ago. That didn't pan out. They've had enough
gone.
Bad draft picks with quarterbacks that there's no wonder they've been floundering for years. But if Rodgers is healthy, I like him.
They rival Chicago in drafting quarterbacks and not having any luck with them. But we talked about the Buccaneers and also the Falcons a great deal in the first half hour. Rodgers in Atlanta, he gets to see Falcons live, but. Give me your ideas, Doug Fernandez. What do you think about the South? You like the Falcons or do you like the Buccaneers?
Well, I don't know. You got to go with the Buccaneers, right? I mean, they re-signed Mayfield. They've had a successful draft the last couple of drafts. They're a good team. Are they Brady good? No, of course not. Brady came there and he won a Super Bowl and then he retired. But this team will contend. The thing about the South Division is, it always seems like every season another team sort of leaps up and takes forward, right? Grabs the mantle. You know, the Bucs, the Saints. I mean, listen, the Falcons have Raheem Morris, the ex-Bucs coach. He's now their head coach. The Falcons bypassed Bill Belichick to bring in Raheem Morris. And I covered the Bucs when Raheem was there. And he didn't really have good control of that Bucs team. He tried to be too friendly with the players, like one of the players. He's probably learned that you can't be that way. You have to be the head coach, and they're the players. But I'm not ready to anoint them the king of the South. I mean, Raheem, I don't know. I mean, when they didn't take Belichick and hired Raheem Morris, I mean, I went, whoa. I don't know. But then I found out that Kraft did not give him a good recommendation at all, which if you're wondering about the relationship between Bill Belichick and Bob Kraft, that should tell you everything, that he was going for a job and basically Kraft torpedoed him, did not give him a good recommendation at all, and that's why he didn't get the Atlanta job. So, but you notice how Belichick is on five different shows now. The guy who would never talk to the media is now on five different shows, and he's missed the football. He's everywhere now, you know? I mean, the guy never spoke. Now you can't shut him up, you know?
Yeah, but you know why, Doug? He's got a 24-year-old girlfriend now. That he travels with. This is a different Bill Belichick now.
No, he's going to save his energy then. He can't be doing all these TV shows. You know? No,
well, you guys never mentioned the Saints. I mean, the Saints have They dropped right out of the picture. You see no hope for the Saints.
Like I said, every year a new team takes the lead in that division. Like, listen, when the Patriots were in the AFC East, it was the Patriots every year. Patriots, Patriots, Patriots. In the NFC South, every team has their year, right? And next year another team comes up. So it very well could be the Saints. Who's their quarterback? Who's the quarterback for the Saints?
I don't know.
I mean, I feel bad. These guys change. I mean, it used to be Jameis Winston, you know, and obviously it was Drew Brees. I don't know who the heck the quarterback is at New Orleans now. I don't know. Why? You like
the Winston, as Roy says, Winston's pretty much relegated now to being a backup quarterback because he didn't take the chance when he was a free agent then this year, and all he did was sign to be a backup quarterback. So everybody pretty much assumes that Winston had such high grades and such high marks, he was going to be a big factor in the National Football League, but he hasn't been. And he hasn't been with any team he's been with. He's been a backup, and now he's signed as a free agent, a backup again. So I don't expect great things from Winston, no.
Well, the thing is, when he was with the Bucs, he'd make a good play and then make two bonehead ones. And then when you look at the stats at the end of the year, he had almost as many interceptions as he did touchdowns. You know, he wasn't very careful with the ball. And if you're not careful with the ball as a quarterback, you won't have a job. You won't have work. Exactly.
And that's what happened to him. Well, Roger, let's switch over to baseball now because I know Doug wants to tell us about those Red Sox and how they're going to make a serious drive the last month of the season to get into the playoffs. Roger, how do you see the American League East?
No, go ahead, Doug. Go ahead. You want to go first with that.
They're doing the same thing they did last year where they overachieved for three quarters of the year, and in the last part of the year they just collapsed. And they end up at 500 or below, and I think we're seeing that right now. Listen, they're not the Red Sox they were of a few years ago where they spent millions and millions of dollars. They operate on the cheap now. They look for players that have been cut by other teams that have five ERAs and are batting 220. And I can't believe the Red Sox have resorted to becoming, you know, Tampa Bay Rays North, which is what they have become. They're trying to operate on the same sort of budget and the same mindset. But, you know, the Rays wrote the book on that. And, they brought in Bloom, who was the general manager of the Rays. They brought him in, and he was gone after 3 years. I mean, a lot of the guys he signed didn't pan out. You know, you look at their rotation now. I mean, the guys who are number one starters would be number five starters on the team a few years ago. And they're just piecemeal. They hire guys that I never heard of. It really is sad that one of the oldest teams in baseball – and let's face it, that's a marquee name. It's always better for baseball when the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Dodgers are doing well, when they're playing well. It's always better for baseball because they're one of the stewards of the league. But the Red Sox are – and the thing is, they're not going to change anytime soon. This is their philosophy. They're going to try to, you know, get guys here or there, develop the farm system, but they're not going to sound like guys like Chris Sale anymore. And one more thing, guys. The worst trade in history. You know, they traded one time Sparky Lyle for a guy named Danny Cater, right? Danny Cater was a first baseman. They picked up. Sparky Lyle ended up winning the Cy Young for the Yankees. And it's a very similar trade. They traded Chris Sale, who's going to win the Cy Young in the NL this year, and they traded him for a guy, Marquise Grissom, who's down in the minor leagues. I mean, he's okay to play, but the Red Sox say you're not good enough to play. And they traded, you know, a potential Cy Young winner for this guy. So a lot of the trades haven't worked out either for that team. So it's very sad. Very sad.
Just to throw this in before Roger comes out, I think Danny Cater was the guy that reached in and had his right or left hand wrist broken on a play at first base where, you know, it was close and the runner ran right over Cater. I'm almost sure he was the one that was playing first base that got his wrist broken.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a guy who the Red Sox had right. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, Doug.
No, I was just going to say Danny Cater. They had just traded George Scott to Milwaukee, and they needed a first baseman. So if you look at this guy, Danny Cater, and, you know, he was there 1 year, then they got rid of him.
Roger?
Well, yeah, and Sparky Lyle, I remember a number of years ago after he retired,
He was a manager of a team that was in Camden, New Jersey, in that independent league, which is now the Rutgers Camden field. You know, and I'm thinking Sparky Lyle, a manager in this independent league with his credentials, I would have thought that he would have gotten something, you know, at least in the minors or the majors. And I don't know whether he ever did after that or not, but you're right. I mean, Sparky Lyle won that for the Yankees. There was no doubt about it.
It was him and Goose Gossage. He was the righty and Sparky Lyle was the lefty. And they were a tremendous combination. But the game of the week, I'm going to switch gears, guys. High school football started down here. The team down here that everybody follows is Venice High School, which is south of Sarasota. They are playing Miami Northwestern, who has a new head coach this year. Teddy Bridgewater, the NFL quarterback, retired, and he became a high school head coach of his alma mater. He retired, immediately became a high school head coach. So he'll be on the sidelines for Miami Northwestern. But, you know, what is a guy, I mean, you're a pro quarterback, you've had a 13-year career, and then suddenly you want to go coach your high school alma mater. That's I like that, but that's kind of weird, too.
You know who did that, Doug? Was Philip Rivers. When he retired, he went down, where is it, Mississippi or Louisiana? And he went down to this Catholic high school where I guess he played, and he was the head coach right away. And at the middle school that I sub at here in, outside in Cumming, Georgia, there's two guys that had played in the NFL that are assistant coaches. One is Sean Bailey, who played at Georgia. And I forget the other gentleman, but he had a number of years in the NFL, and he's on the middle school coaching staff because their kids are there. I think I give them a lot of credit. I talked to Sean last week. I've had his son in class, and we had a really nice talk. And I told him, I said, I have the utmost respect for you guys that take the time out because they're not making any money in a middle school as an assistant coach, let me tell you.
No, we had,
well, the other thing,
I
saw Chaminade, Doug, I saw Chaminade play last Saturday night against John Bosco. Was on New York TV. And it's part of that the high school tournament that they do. I think they played in Atlanta, if I remember. There was a big A in the middle of the field. I didn't have the sound on, so I couldn't tell where the ballpark was they were playing in. But they have I didn't know that I knew Don Bosco was pretty good. John Bosco, not Don Bosco. John Bosco was pretty good. And St. Joseph Philadelphia is in this thing, too. They play. I don't know what week they're going to play. But you're right. I mean, some of these high school football games, the game I saw last Saturday night between those two teams was better than a lot of the games I see on, you know, major league players.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, the high school football down here, the lack of aggression in today's society, let's face it, right? Everybody's a huggy kissy, not old school. When you watch high school football now, the kids don't know how to tackle. They can't teach tackling like they used to. You know, those Oklahoma drills, you know, where you fight through the block and then you take on the runner. They don't do that anymore. They don't do any sort of tackling, any physicality. So when they come play a game, they don't know how to tackle. And that's why you see guys just grabbing at jerseys. They're not form tackling. They're not putting the shoulder in there. All they're doing is grabbing at a jersey or they grab at the helmet. And that's why you see so many face mask penalties now in high school football because they don't want to tackle. Either they don't know how,
or they roll block. Doug, they roll block. They don't tackle. They roll block. That's what they do. And as you, the penalties, there were five penalties in five consecutive series in this Bosco game last Saturday night. Exactly what you're talking about. They either grabbed the helmet or they had they had some other illegal procedure penalty, five straight possessions. And you're right. I mean, they don't tackle anymore, and it carries in. Look at the pro at the college game. They don't tackle there either. They roll ball.
And
that's
pros.
What they do.
Yeah.
The pros, well, they think that they could just run and just knock these guys over. Like the force of them will knock them over, you know, like a bowling pin. But the thing is, these guys, especially if you do that, the guy is gone if he doesn't fall over, right? You're not wrapping up. All you're doing is running into him, trying to knock him down. And if
right.
he doesn't, he's gone. And you see that all the time. And what also you see in the high school level is this. These guys don't want to hit, but when they get out of bounds, then they do something illegal. And I'm like, why aren't you hitting them in the field of play? Why do you want
right.
to get out of bounds and then give them a shot? What are you doing that for? Do it while it's legal. And they get a 15-yard unsportsmanlike like conduct penalty, late hit penalty. I see it all the time, all the time.
Hey, you don't only see it in high school. You see it in the pros, too. I mean, they do the same thing every now and then. They take somebody out of bounds, and then they want to push them into the bench or do something crazy. It's Roger, you're up.
Well, yeah, you're right. I'll tell you, that was the one thing. Last night I saw the first half of the middle school game, excuse me, between the rivals, Hendricks and Vickery. And that was the one thing that I picked up on, Doug, in that the first half that I saw. Hendricks did a great job of tackling. They really did. And I picked up on that, and I'm thinking, you know, you don't see it. You don't see it at any level, like we're saying. But I did see it last night, which indicates to me that the two guys that I talked about that played in the NFL and were around for a while, they knew how to tackle. I mean, Sean Bailey played at Georgia, and that was the old day, I guess, with Mark Richt, you know, before Kirby. And I was impressed. The kids did a really good job of tackling. They weren't afraid to go and hit somebody. And, you know, so hopefully there. Let's hope that there is hope. That's all I can say about that.
When I played football, I'm 62 years old. I mean, you could clothesline a guy and get away with it, right? You could do all kinds of things to a guy. And you could play football as it was meant to be played. But you see it with the physicality and the violence, quote-unquote, being taken out a little bit every year. Well, in 10 years, we'll be playing flag football. That's what it's coming to. It'll be flag football. There won't be any contact whatsoever.
Hold on. Let's leave it right there. We got our next guest standing by. But one quick comment because you cover our basketball announcer from start to finish. Just a quick update on his health because I know you write columns about it all the time. Give us a quick update on his health.
My
Vic
health.
Vital, I'm talking about.
Oh, well, Vital is. He got finished radiation again. You know, it's something he's going to have to be on top of, you know, going forward. And, you know, he has the best doctors, Mass General. He has to stay on top of this cancer he's had because it comes back in his throat, and then they have to radiate it again. But here's the thing, bottom line, I don't think you're going to hear Dick Vitale on the air anymore. His voice just is not coming back like it used to. You know, he hoped that this procedure would give him a voice loud enough to be on TV. But when you talk to him, he's still almost barely above a whisper. So, unfortunately, I don't think you'll see Dick Vitale behind a mic anytime soon.
Well, Doug, thanks very
news.
Much for this segment. It's always great. And thanks for an update on Dick Vitale. And I'll try to get a hold of him just to say hello and hope that he's just keeps getting the radiation and improves. Thanks a lot for being with us. We'll catch you on the next
run.
Always
fun, guys. Okay. Always
thanks,
good
guys.
To talk to you.
All right. Trevor Basso is ready right now. Excuse me. Trevor, last week when we talked to you, you were just about in the position to reevaluate the East. And I think, I'm not sure whether it was there was two divisions that you were going to put together for this week. What do you got for us, Trevor?
Well, obviously, thank you guys for having me back on. I really appreciate it. But today, we're actually going to be doing some recording tonight based on the AFC. We're going to be discussing the AFC West and the AFC South potentially tonight, getting that on YouTube if anyone out there wants to go check that out. But, obviously I'm a Lions fan, so I'm more versed in the NFC. And I know we have a bunch of Eagles fans on the show. But the NFC, in my opinion, has been obviously with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' dominance with Andy Reid, they're kind of the headline of the AFC year in and year out for the past 5-6 years now. But with the NFC, it's consistently contended for. I mean, and we know the 49ers have been dominant and the Eagles had that Super Bowl run recently. But we, you know, as Lions fans are excited for this season. I just want to say that it's probably the most anticipated Detroit Lions season of all time. And it's possibly on paper the best roster that team has ever had when it comes to depth. I mean, the amount of receivers they have on their on their practice squad, they have Allen Robinson, Tim Patrick, Donovan Peoples-Jones. These guys were all starters in the NFL, and they're on the practice squad competing to get on the field again. They want to go into a culture-shifted building. Dan Campbell has changed this organization. The NFC North is going to be crazy competitive this year. And the NFC East is also going to be pretty competitive. I think that Jaden Daniels is going to be an immediate impact player for the Commanders. I don't like the name. I hate saying it. It does not roll off my tongue well. But obviously the Eagles are always going to be contended and very good at every position. They're loaded. They have a great GM, a great system. We talked about them at length last week. But and then you can't forget about the Cowboys. They were kind of remained stagnant in the offseason, didn't really make any moves that impressed me. They paid their players, which I respect that CeeDee Lamb contract. You do not want to let a player like that walk out the door. So I respect, you know, them locking him in for the amount and the years that they did. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. That's common knowledge. What he can do is crazy. And then obviously Dak Prescott is, you know, still a question mark, but what he does in the regular season, I mean, he's still an upper echelon quarterback despite my bias against him. And then we cannot forget about the Giants. We talked about them a little bit in hilariosity a little bit last week, but, you know, let's hope that they can kind of turn it around in terms of getting some of the young players like Malik Nabers involved. You don't want to see them waste their careers in a sense at a poverty organization. I like Brian Daboll. I think they're going to be a little better than last year. I just really hope I don't see Daniel Jones on the field. That's all I'll say.
Roger, your comment on the East, because everybody is sort of, even Billy last week, you know, he's talking 11-12 game, at least for the Eagles, to coast home on the East. But how about the rest of the division when you get down to the Giants and the quarterback that Trevor's referring to is a real question mark?
Well, it is. I was just looking at the Eagles 53-man roster as of right now, and one that you and I and Frank, Trevor's not that familiar with, but his father, Jeremiah, okay, the junior, made the team. And I was really glad, out of St. Joe's Prep, Don, just like you were talking about earlier. So, I think Trevor mentioned last week about the Commanders could be number two behind the Eagles. And I say, the more I see and read, I could see that as a possibility. And I don't know what happens to Mike McCarthy if the Cowboys don't make it into the playoffs and go deep. But I think the Cowboys have issues, and you mentioned that earlier, Don. So, but the Giants, I think, are going to be the caboose in the NFC East.
Trevor, let's go back to you and not only talk about the quarterback, because I think he is a big question mark. I agree with you. He really had a tough week last week. He threw two interceptions almost before the game got started in the first 4 minutes. But at the same time, they come around and they make a trade with Washington. I just can't believe that Washington would trade a 60th first-round draft pick to the Giants in the same division. I just that really surprised me. Some of your thoughts on that, Trevor?
Yeah, I mean, going to Daniel Jones, I mean, just for a little stat for everyone out there, the Giants didn't throw a passing touchdown in preseason. That is alarming. More alarming than you would speculate, because a lot of people will say, you know, preseason is boring, it's meaningless. But when you have your starters out there, that's bad. That's a bad look for an organization that is trying to turn it around. But no, I mean, we've seen those interdivisional trades, but it doesn't surprise me, because I mean, like you said, the Giants are looking to be. Luckily, if they can get in third place in this division, that'd be a stretch. But At this point, I think the Commanders kind of have overlapped them in terms of talent. I think they have a better quarterback already. I think Jaden Daniels' ceiling is far higher than anything Daniel Jones has ever shown on field. I mean, he's had that one good season, but since then it's just been a
and hurt. He's hurt all the time.
100%, and it's not helping the team, and it – you know, it's not going to help Malik Nabers, a top 10 pick, a wide receiver that needs a good quarterback to throw him the ball. They have that good tight end as well, Theo Johnson. They're talking about involving him more in the offense, but the Giants have a good defense. I'll say that. They actually have a really solid front seven that's going to be carrying them through this season for sure. And if that's the recipe for the Giants going forward, then maybe. But, I mean, they paid Daniel Jones so much money. They luckily have an out in his contract after this year, which I imagine they're going to be, you know, letting him walk out the door after this season, and then hopefully drafting someone, maybe Quinn Ewers, someone that falls later in the first round, but they probably are going to have a top 10 pick based on, you know, what we've seen.
Right. Give me your evaluation on the Commanders, because that would be almost a giant move for them to go where they were last year. They almost got to the playoffs, but we're still a couple of games back. But you think they got a shot this year to make an impact?
I really do. I outside of Caleb Williams, in my personal opinion, Jaden Daniels was one of the most pro-ready quarterbacks going into the NFL in this past draft. If you look at his numbers against the blitz, on the run, out of college, I mean, he was doing really, really good things. And honestly, this entire team has gotten a whole revamp. They did bring in veterans like Bobby Wagner to help out their young guys on defense. They let go of Jahan Dotson for some draft capital with the Eagles. That's an overload pick. The Eagles don't need Jahan Dotson, but they just said, you know what, we're going to do it because they can. That's just criminal. I'm so jealous. But the Commanders, in my opinion, they're heading in the right direction with culture change. I do like their coordinator situation. I do like their new head coach. I think that Dan Quinn getting his second chance as a head coach is he got this in due time. He put in his years as a coordinator, showed that he can still coach in this league, and I know his defense is going to be good. It typically always is. It was in Dallas.
I think Quinn's an excellent coach. I agree with you. I'll be very surprised if things don't pan out for him, you know, with the Commanders. I really believe it. Roger, you jump in.
Yeah, I agree too, because I've never felt that it was Dan Quinn that lost that Super Bowl, you know, to the Patriots for the Falcons. You know, I just never did. That was an offensive mistake. And Shanahan blew it, not Dan Quinn. But he's the
right
man. He's the one that takes the heat, that's all. But, yeah, I think that he'll do a great job. And I think talent-wise, obviously, I think the Eagles are far superior. I was looking at the Cowboys website. I'll tell you what, if you ever take a look at that, that is really something else. And that's one of the reasons that they get so much publicity, because they do the best job with social media. Do you look at their website, Trevor, at all?
Well, I personally have never visited their website. I haven't, but I will say
take a look at it, because you're big into social media, and they cover all bases, and I mean it's so high tech. Their website, or their app, I should say. I'm not looking at the website. I'm looking at the app. But it's worth
right.
it just to take a look and see what they do. But I do think the Commanders very well can, you know, be the second place in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys are the number one merchandised franchise sports team in the world. I mean, They have to be on top of that. And I'll give Jerry Jones credit. He's probably the best marketer of all time when it comes to sports. I mean, he can sell the team. He gives all the fans all the hope in the world that they're going to bring a Super Bowl ring back. But, you know, in this century, it is yet to happen, which I love to see. You know, sorry, Cowboys fans out there, but I'm not sorry about that. But
he also says I'm the best general manager for the Dallas Cowboys. That may not be true, but that's what he says. I'm the best gentleman. Who else would be able to be the general manager's team? I am the general. I'm the general manager.
This is the same guy that after last year's draft, he showed his entire draft board to national TV. Like, you don't really do that, dude. Like, keep some things behind closed doors, Jerry.
Roger.
Unless it's a farce and he's just setting everybody up, which is not what he did. You're right.
But no, going back to the Commanders, I think it comes down to Cliff Kingsbury. He's also getting a second chance as an offensive coordinator. He flamed out in Arizona as the head coach. His offense, I think, will be friendly to Jaden Daniels. They have good pieces like Terry McLaurin. They're definitely a team you don't want to sleep on. They have old, reliable pieces all around the board to help out Jaden Daniels. I really like Brian Robinson, their running back who got shot 7 times in the leg, and he still made his rookie season. Really, really remarkable story. Definitely an underdog team, but, I mean, we saw C.J. Stroud come in as a rookie and make an immediate impact and make a playoff run. I could see that with Jaden Daniels. I really could. He has the flair. And it really just comes down to, I think, a matter of luck, that's a potential scenario we could see for sure.
What other teams did you scout this week?
We're doing the AFC West tonight, but we just finished up our AFC North episode, which is already posted on YouTube if you guys want to go check that out. But we talked about the Browns and our expectations for Deshaun Watson and, obviously – discussing the Steelers and Russell Wilson being named the starting quarterback and Justin Fields backing him up. And Mike Tomlin has come out and said he has a specific Justin Fields package that he might run during the regular season. So I'm curious to see how that's even going to work. There's a high chance he doesn't have a winning season for the first time in his career. There's a lot of speculation around this team. They still have a loaded defense, as always, but I just still think they're running into the same quarterback problems, and it's going to be a carousel this year, and it's just not going to work. Because I honestly think Russell Wilson is done. I think this will probably be his last year, if not one of his last years in the NFL. I was watching him in preseason against the Lions, and he was struggling to stand up in the pocket. It just did not look good. And I don't think he even surpassed 300 yards total in the preseason, and he played quite a bit. They were trying to figure out who the best matchup was, but – and the fact that Justin Fields played worse is a little concerning, but they have a good run game. I think Najee Harris will have a bounce back year at that running back position. Maybe he's been dodging media, so I think he has the right mindset, but he's just got to produce on field. I think the Bengals are going to have a phenomenal season. Joe Burrow is going to be back with 100%. We just got to see him stay healthy because the 2 seasons he has been healthy, I mean, he's done pretty remarkable things in Cincinnati, and that's with one of the cheapest owners in all of the NFL, a guy that just finally got an indoor practice field when Joe Burrow got drafted. So finally wanting to win, the Bengals should probably get back into it, especially being in the Super Bowl a few years back. I mean, they want to get back to that glory. So that was an interesting conversation to talk about some of the AFC divisions. But we're almost done. We have 3 more recap videos to cover in that regard. And then we're going to be doing kind of a 2024 NFL season like preview. So we're just talking about expectations and our predictions and giving out our early Super Bowl predictions, which don't ask me that question yet. I haven't even thought about it.
Roger, any team you want to touch on?
Yeah, Tomlin announced today that Russell Wilson is his starting quarterback. I heard him on Sirius NFL Radio, number one. Number two is it looks like Kenny Pickett is going to be third string with the Eagles, and Tanner McKee is going to be the number two. Which does not surprise me because I have been impressed with McKee for the this is his third year since the first time I saw him. He is more not like Hurts. He's more of a drop back quarterback from the old style, the old days. But the other thing that I heard today that Lamar Jackson has lost 50 pounds. And he's going to be doing more running. Have you heard anything about that with him with the Ravens?
I mean, I haven't heard anything about, you know, any weight loss, but I'm not too informed on the Ravens currently, but I'll say that that doesn't surprise me because he's one of the most physically gifted players in the league. He's trying to get to the Super Bowl. He doesn't want another MVP, although that would be amazing, but it's Super Bowl or bust for the Baltimore Ravens. They have had insane regular seasons, gone in as favorites, first-round buys, and then they just get smoked in the playoffs. Like, if it's not by the Chiefs, it's by someone else in the AFC that they should win against. Like, it's weird. They do not perform like they did under Joe Flacco in the playoffs. I don't know why, but it's just
for
strange.
For some reason, they
changed
their offense. All of a sudden, they decide to throw more and let them run around. And they don't – Harbaugh's such a great coach. But the last 2 years, when they get to the first game of the playoffs, he seems to change his system, the way they're going to operate, and it just doesn't work.
Great call out there, because I've noticed that exact same thing. In those one-or-done situations, they really don't play like they do in the regular season. Because, I mean, last year, let's not forget, they mollywopped the Detroit Lions like 38-12 week four. Where is that performance against the Chiefs in the playoffs? You know, I mean, the Lions beat the Chiefs. You smacked the Lions. You should easily beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. I mean, there's no excuse going into this season for the Ravens going into the playoffs, which we all expect them to be there.
Roger?
Well, yeah, I do too. And it wouldn't surprise me if they win the Super Bowl this year. You can never count the Chiefs and Andy Reid out. I don't care. He may get off to a slow start and they come back. I mean, look at the Houston Astros and the horrendous start that they got off to. And here they are in first place. And I'm sure they're going to be in the playoffs. And who knows what they can do in the playoffs. But I'm with you. I really always impressed with John Harbaugh, and they have stability. That's all you can say. I think they're going to be there.
No, I agree.
Let's go back to Roger's thought about the backup quarterback for the Philadelphia, or backup two quarterbacks, two and three, for the Philadelphia Eagles. What do you have on them?
I mean, Kenny Pickett is a certified bust. I mean, first-round quarterback, 3 years on his original team, now a quarterback three. The guy I probably wouldn't mind seeing in the UFL, and no negative slight. I mean, that's probably what he needs. Sam Hartman was let go by the Commanders, and the Stallions drafted his player, right? So we might see him play for the Stallions. The UFL is not only a catalyst. If you fail or just have a rough go at it, that's a great place to go get reps and just to put out tape. Cause I mean, you may not stick, but you never know. It's a gamble worth taking. But Tanner McKee, like you said, I mean, he's been progressing. He's been with the team. He's showing that he can, you know, play. I'm a little worried about the depth of quarterback for the Eagles, just in general, cause Jalen Hurts, they lost seven out of their last eight games last year. And they did not look like they could complete a pass at some point. So if that comes down to it again this year, I mean, I don't know if Tanner McKee is a guy that's going to come in there and win you a 3 out of 4 games. You know, that's a concern for me, but I just want to see Jalen Hurts turn it around and not give us any question marks about his game anymore. Consistency is key. They cannot have a season collapse again.
I haven't seen anything with Jalen this year because, you know, the exhibition game that they don't play. And, Roger, you're confident that he's going to bounce back from the year? First of all, they think he was hurt. And secondly, he just had a bad year. What do you think?
Well, if he has a bad year, then they're in big time trouble. But I like Tanner McKee. Now, you probably saw him in the exhibition games, Don, because they played McKee and Pickens. And that's why it looks like that McKee is the number two now. What did you think? You saw him. What did you think of McKee? Don?
Oh, you asking me?
What you thought of McKee.
Well, I thought he was. I just don't like the fact that you don't really see them play against the real competition, and that's my point with all these exhibition games. It's like you don't really see them play against the guys that are going to be playing when it really counts. But I mean, he's got the talent. To me, he showed that he can play. Trevor, we got to move along, but give us your quick comment on what do you think?
I think, outside of Jalen Hurts needing that bounce back year, we need to see how this O-line operates. I mean, losing a Hall of Famer, a first ballot Hall of Fame center, probably the best center of all time. I mean, those are massive shoes to fill. So this offense is definitely going to have its growing pains, in my opinion. But it comes down to Jalen Hurts' performance and how Nick Sirianni reacts as a coach. But I do like the Eagles' chances. They're always competitive, at least in the past 15. Well, honestly, this whole century they've been competitive, as long as Howie Roseman's been there. But, I mean, you got to give them credit. I mean, but at the end of the day, there are those question marks that we need answered, and they did not end off on a high note last year, especially in that playoff game. So if we can see those adjustments made, I have hope.
Trevor, thank you very much. We'll do it all again next week, and by that time we'll be right up against the Eagles. We'll be starting the next night down in Brazil, so we'll be all ready to start the season. Thank you very, very much. Mike Zimczak is ready to season. The season is underway in the world of soccer. I got a couple of questions, past questions, because we haven't had Mike on for a while. Mike, first of all, in the Brazil game, you told us to watch for the young lady that had been for 20 years the most successful and dominant player in women's soccer. So my first question is, was she the one that scored the first goal that was eliminated? And my second question is, why was the goal eliminated? I mean, the U.S. won 1-0. Why was the goal eliminated? Because they didn't really explain what happened.
No, she was not the one that scored the first goal. Marta came on in the second half.
That's what I
gotta
thought.
Go all the way. Yeah, I got to go think about what I remember. The as I recall, the first goal that Brazil scored in the first half was ruled offside. So the woman who scored the goal, who got around Naomi Girma to put the ball in, she was marginally offside when they played the pass that got her behind the defense. And the semi-automated technology gave the ref that, and that was why the goal was called off.
Okay, that answers my two questions. Number three is that you've talked repeatedly about the U.S. men's team, and they finally have, according to the papers and everything I read, they finally have the coach they want. They finally have a disciplinarian. They finally have somebody that is going to turn the whole attitude of the U.S. team around. You agree with that, or you disagree with that?
According to the papers and everything that you read, but the problem is that Mauricio Pochettino hasn't actually been hired yet. We know that there's an agreement. We know that he intends to take the job. But he has not actually been hired yet because there's a matter of negotiating his severance package with his last club. He was making like $5 million a season as manager of Chelsea, and he was fired after one season with two seasons remaining. The U.S. men's national team job does not pay what Chelsea would pay, and he wants his money, and I can't blame him. So until they get and figure out how they're going to fund this contract, it's all in theory. Those of us who are big men's national team fans and cover and watch them a lot are kind of waiting on pins and needles, checking every day to see if the situation has changed and wait for the announcement. Because as of right now, any team national team, club team, anybody who wanted Mauricio Pochettino could reach out to him, negotiate a deal, and sign him because he has not signed his contract yet.
Really, you say this is the guy. This is the guy we want. This is the guy we need. This is the kind of leadership we need to get the right person. And I did not know that the negotiations, because everything I read was it was all lined up, and he was going to come in, and he was going to be the dominant force that they've waited for years to take over this team.
I am with you. I hope so, but there actually is no. He has not been signed. He's not hit. You haven't seen an introductory press conference. You know, they apparently reached the agreement, the contract, everything's negotiated, everything's waiting there, but they have to figure out this compensation with his previous club and how they're going to make sure that he gets the money that he is entitled to. So it seems a lot to me like the U.S. Agreed to a contract, let the details of said contract leak without actually figuring out how they were going to pay for the contract. I'm interested to see. If we do, and which we should, get Mauricio Pochettino, he's a very, very well-regarded manager. He's took Tottenham to the Champions League finals. He's been the coach of Paris Saint-Germain. He's coached Messi. He's coached Harry Kane. He's coached some of the biggest names in world football, and he's got a really, really fantastic reputation. He's very, very, very well respected, and he's the type of guy who, when he walks into the dressing room, the players are going to sit up and listen. When he tells them to do something, they would be best advised to do it, because he does know how to make teams better. He does know how to get guys noticed, how to improve the quality of play. I think that he will be somebody who will make it tougher. There are some questions that I have. There were some issues at the end of his tenure in West London. He kind of let the locker room get away from him. We have seen that has happened already for the U.S. men's national team. One of the big ones is that despite having coached twice now in England, he does not speak English. He's Argentinian. He speaks Spanish. How he's going to communicate on the field with the players, I definitely know that he will likely communicate to the media through a translator, but how he's going to do that in training is going to be interesting. One of the things that that U.S. was very, very specific about was that they wanted a coach with a positive international track record and who spoke English. Pochettino has a phenomenal reputation. I'm not going to deny that. He has a phenomenal reputation. He is probably the most sought-after coach out on the market right now. But the two things that I know that are kind of odd and why they made this decision, he does not speak English, and the man has never actually won a trophy.
Roger, you're up.
Well, that's interesting. He met one of the requirements, but excuse me. Pardon me. He's never won a trophy. But
he's never won a major trophy. And the other thing is they wanted the coach to manage the manager to live in the United States. He does not. He lives in Europe. And they allowed him to live in Europe. So, again, the U.S. put out a job description for what they wanted in a coach, and then hired a guy who fulfills none of their three major requirements.
Well, that's interesting. That's plan A. Let's go to plan B. What would they do if this does not work out on the severance and compensation?
I would like them to go back and revisit the manager of Hoffenheim, who was an early candidate, Pellegrino Matarazzi. He's an American-born coach. His parents are Italian immigrants from Naples. He went to Colombia. He's from the United States. He grew up playing soccer in the United States, but he's not of the United States insofar as he has learned to coach over in Germany. He's worked with some of the better minds over there. He really is a guy who went over to Germany right after college and tried to make his way, was never better than a second or third division player, got into coaching, has risen up through the ranks. His track record is not as lengthy as Pochettino's, but I think he's an innovative coach. He's very well respected. He knows both European and in the U.S. soccer. And he said that he wants to give back at some point. Oh, yeah, and the dude is, like, obscenely tall. I think he's, like, 6'7".
Wow. A 6'7", playing soccer is something is really unusual, isn't it?
Oh, no, I just want to know that my coach is the tallest one out there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he's almost good on the sideline. It's and in press conferences, like he's like obscenely tall.
I agree with you, Roger. 6'7" is a little unusual when you watch soccer. Most of these guys are, you know, 5'8", 5'9". The goaltenders are big, for the most part.
Yeah,
but
there's some bigger defenders, but most of the guys are around. Most of the tallest that you'll see are around 6'5". He was unusually tall for. You're correct. He was unusually tall for a soccer.
Okay, player. My next question. This probably is hasn't been verified either, but as I read it, the National Women's Soccer League and its players have reached a deal on a broad new collective bargaining agreement that eliminates the annual college draft, guarantees all contracts, and raises minimum salaries for the players. Now, where does that stand?
If they're saying that's agreed upon, I had missed that, but I would imagine that the agreement just needs to be ratified by the unions. And to be honest, I wouldn't expect much trouble there. There's no reason that – look, the NWSL is humming right now. They are doing really, really, really good numbers in terms of attendance. They've got a really good TV contract. So this league is looking solid. Now they're at the point where they feel comfortable expanding. So there's a lot of incentive on both sides to keep the not upset the apple cart. The elimination of the college draft is just a reflection of where U.S. soccer is. Most of the young men and women who play at that level are already identified by high school and in one of the academies or training programs. And then so if it's somebody who does end up going to college, it gives them the ability to come out of college having played 2, 3, 4 years in college and sign for a team as a free agent. I think the guaranteeing of the contracts is big, and you know, every league wants to raise the minimum scale, but the guaranteeing of the contracts is very important. We're finally seeing – there's no comparison even now in between where the MLS contracts are with the National Women's Soccer League contracts, but we're starting to see more and more 6- and 7-figure women's contracts, which is reflective of the financial strength of the game. I was just down there this weekend. They did a doubleheader. The Washington Spirit were playing. They were welcoming back all their female Olympians, Trinity Rodman especially. And then afterwards, Chelsea and Arsenal played. And this was a very, very warm Saturday, gentlemen. It was about 96 degrees, and the games were separated by over an hour. But there were 17,000 people who went out to this doubleheader. So that's kind of puts it in perspective. That's a really big crowd for just about any soccer game. And that's a really big crowd for a summer sport in D.C. I'd be surprised if the Nationals are drawing that.
Yeah.
One last question for me before we jump over to golf, and Doug's waiting on the wings. But the English Premier League also, we can talk a little bit about that because they returned to action last week. And Manchester, they're looking for, what, 6 in a row now? How do you rate that?
Very, very likely. Manchester City is an absolute machine. And I would be – if you were betting, I would take them and give everybody the field, and I'd be comfortable with the short odds. It's theirs to lose. Arsenal may give them a run for their money, but
right.
If Manchester City lose the title, it'll be because they lost it, not because anybody takes it from them.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much once again.
One quick question, Don. Mike, the MISL is starting. They've had practices resuming and everything. How does it look to you for the balance of their season?
We're past the League Cup stage in the MLS. I think that there's been some transition. We saw a big signing in L.A. Marco Reus, a longtime German player, came over and immediately gave them that spark. That was the kind of signing that I've talked about in the past, where it's like one guy who come in and suddenly lift an entire franchise. Of course, as long as Inter Miami has Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez, they've got to be made the favorites. Hopefully
okay.
Atlanta United and Philadelphia Union can pick it up and make a run at the playoffs as the season goes on. But definitely in the Eastern Conference, I'm looking at Inter Miami as the favorites.
Okay.
And probably
well, great. Yeah. Thanks so much. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, Mike.
All right, gentlemen, I'll say hi to Doug for me, and I'll talk to you all next week. Have a good one.
Okay.
We'll do it, partner.
Mike.
Take care, Mike. All right, let's switch over to golf right now because the FedEx is coming to the final, the championship round this week, and they're playing at a very unusual golf course at the lake, and more importantly, they've completely changed the course between last year and this year. I don't know how, Doug, maybe you could tell me this because I know you know a lot about not only the golf itself because you're a PGA professional, but also the buildings of the course. How were they able to do in 1 year transform this course into a completely different course? Sand traps, fairways, and greens.
Yeah.
Usually it takes 2 years before a course is really ready, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends a lot on the timing of. I mean, you're talking about in most cases, I mean, there's a juxtapose between whether they're resodding that, whether they're actually trying to regrow certain of those areas. But I mean, those courses, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, the PGA Tour and the courses and what they resource-wise have when it comes to the ability to go in there and make changes and have just an army full of people and machines and all these different things. I mean, you know, from time to time, I mean, at the end of the day, like a lot of golf courses, depending on what types of grasses they have, I mean, the life expectancy of most greens is about, you know, 20 years or so before they have to start thinking about either regrassing or, you know, figuring out what they're going to do to keep that up to specifications. I mean, you start putting, you know, people and fairway mowers and rough mowers and all these different things on certain portions of ground over courses of time, they give way. They need, you know, there's compaction. There's all these different things that add to, you know, the need to do that. In this case, what we're talking about is, you know, whether they're moving tee boxes or greens or drainage, irrigation, you know, all these concepts are unto themselves, you know, very challenging. And so certainly their members weren't so happy about it probably because they would have had nowhere to play for a year unless they sent them to other facilities. But, you know, it can be done. And I think a lot of it is potentially stroke of luck, but you're also talking about a southern golf course, which has a much different growing season. So, you know, maybe they get those a little bit, you know, on the right side.
And Doug, before I get to Roger, one other quick question is, maybe you'd explain to our listeners that aren't golf aficionados, and that would be that, how you set up the FedEx, because now even though Scotty's been winning all year, he only gets a two-stroke advantage at the beginning of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Explain how they set up this final round so that, now, for instance, last week, I can't think of his name now, the one last week, he went from being number 38 to being only two strokes back at the start. I can't think of his name though. He's been a player for a while. He's 48.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. The FedEx Cup is one. It's kind of like, to me, it's like, I'm not a NASCAR fan, but when they start talking about, you know, the playoffs and all those sorts of things, like, it's always been a mystery to me, like, how they actually do set those up. I think the playoffs are a wonderful thing for obviously any sport. And I think at the end of the season, for very many years in golf, it was just kind of anticlimactic where they just didn't, you know, have anything. And then all of a sudden, you know, the additions of, you know, having like basically one major, you know, every month for the first couple, and then obviously getting to the end here with the playoffs gives a lot of these guys something to play for and a lot of money to play for to boot.
Right. Bradley was the kid I was trying to think of.
Keegan Bradley.
Yeah, he's 38 years old, which is surprising. But he's won, I think, four or five times on the tour. But he had a great final round to win last week, and it really moved him up in the FedEx. But I don't understand how.
I'm with you, and I think as far as I know, I don't think Keegan Bradley is widely regarded as a very popular individual on the tour. Not very well liked. I think he's probably in that same category as a Greed or, you know, somebody like that, who's kind of a villain type of a, you know, American that you don't necessarily root for. But I mean, look, you know, those, you know, to win it at 38 and to still be playing good golf, and look at Matt Kuchar and, you know, some of your older guys that are playing still at that level, is pretty impressive.
Roger?
Well, I don't know if you want to get to baseball or not, but I guess
go where you want to go.
Okay. We want to talk about the Orioles and the AL East. You know, the Yankees look great sometimes.
Yeah.
Orioles look great sometimes. And same with the Phillies, looking great sometimes. But you know, what's your prognosis, Doug, about the O's?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if you guys were sitting in my my living room and we were watching a game and talking about it, you know, you'd probably hear some words come out of my mouth that we wouldn't necessarily broadcast regarding, you know, some of the...
Let me ask you this. When I turned it off last night, they were up 3-2. Did they win last night?
Yeah.
They beat the Dodgers. Okay.
They held on. That last night was good bullpen night. It's like, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and last night was the good one. Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think we can look back and surmise the fact that Mike Elias at that trade deadline had, you know, a shopping cart full of individuals that he hoped could help this baseball team down the stretch. And I think that, you know, he probably hit on several of those. I think that the biggest mistake, and I, again, back to me swearing in curse words, like Trevor Rogers, for him to go out and make a trade to try to get a left-handed pitcher, okay, I'm with you. I think he got the wrong one. There's probably five other left-handed pitchers on the Marlins that I would have rather had than the one we got. And to give up, you know, a really good prospect in Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers, you know, to get a chance to play, is, I think he'll have some fine seasons in Major League Baseball. I just think that was a complete and total whiff. And for him to send Trevor Rogers down to Triple A, you know, I think it affirms the fact that that wasn't a very, I mean, it just wasn't a good move. Like, I can't imagine that there wasn't anybody else on the trade market that we could have had for that same price, you know, that would have been a better option. I just can't see that. And then they overpaid for something that is just not, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he finds his way down in AAA and becomes a viable part of it. I mean, because, you know, Cole Irvin at one point in time this year, that was a big move they made a couple years ago to get another left-hander, and he didn't pan out. But at one point this season, he had thrown 20-something scoreless innings and then went away. Like, he just couldn't get anybody out. Like, it's frustrating for me as an Oriole fan to watch them play on certain nights when they can't hit the baseball, they have ineffective, non-competitive at-bats, their starting pitching just, you know, you don't have any confidence in them being able to go deep into the games, and then you turn around and then you look at their bullpen and you have and to their defense, there's a number of individuals that are hurt on their pitching staff that has been quite the issue in terms of having to turn to other either inexperienced arms or kind of cast off veterans that you're hoping down the stretch here you can count on, and that's a lot to ask. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, prognosis-wise, you know, I think that they're going to find their way into the playoffs. My guess is that the Yankees will win the AL East and the Orioles will retain one of the wild card positions. And my hope is that they get enough of their injured individuals back that they can make a run at that point. That's my hope.
Well, I'll tell you, it's very, very interesting to watch. If you saw the Yankee game last night, you would think it was a Little League game. They made four errors in the game last night. They lost 4-2 to Washington. I don't know which team is worse, Washington or the Chicago White Sox. But I mean,
White Sox are definitely worse.
They're going to try to challenge the Mets. But I mean, I never saw a team make it the kinds of stupid plays that we see night after night after night. And last night was a perfect example. I mean, the Yankees are throwing balls to get a base runner out of second base, and nobody's covering the bag, and the ball's out of the center field. They're missing balls all over the – it's unbelievable.
For matters of discussion, Don, that doesn't hurt my feelings because I want the Yankees to look bush league and lose. In fact, last I saw, we flipped on the TV here, and they were losing they were losing to Washington again tonight, 5-2. And I'm hopeful that the Nats can do us a solid here and continue to, you know, pound.
I say good
Yankees
because they're on prime tonight. I don't get prime, so every time they're on prime, I root against them. Doug, right. Roger, you're up.
Well, I think that the Yankees probably will too, and. You know, there's a lot of speculation about where Juan Soto may go. And I don't know whether you've probably seen that in a post a lot, Don.
Sure.
excuse me, because I saw something the other day that the Phillies could be in the chase for Juan Soto. So,
what do you think that asking price is?
I think it's a big number. Absolutely a
huge
number.
Well, I mean, let's really take a look because, I mean, you know, the part of the question you asked me from a prognosis standpoint, I mean, I'm obviously all in this year with the Orioles and having them make the playoffs and hopefully make a run and do their thing. But let's also talk about 2025 when, you know, you've got Anthony Santander who's having his best season, who's going to be a free agent. What are we talking about numerically for him? You've got Corbin Burnes who is going to command – I don't know, what, $30 million a year? You know what I mean? Then you're looking at Juan Soto. I mean, what is he going to make? I mean, what are we talking here? Are we talking, I mean, 10 years?
You're talking second-highest player. You're talking about – no, I'm sorry. You're talking third-highest player paid in baseball. It's going to be the Dodgers, then Judge, and then Soto.
Yep. I mean, how is it realistically possible – And to both parts of your question, I mean, if you're saying that the Phillies are potentially in on this, well, I mean, they're paying Bryce Harper.
Paying Castellanos a lot of money too.
Where are these teams getting all this money? Like, how is that fair in the game of baseball when you can say that the Dodgers can go spend $1 billion this last off season, and that's like okay? I mean, you know, that's like saying this year, the Ravens, the Patriots, the Colts, and whoever get an extra $50 million to spend on their payroll, you know, other than the other teams. Like, okay, well, that's basically what you're saying. And I've had this argument on so many levels with so many people, and most of them are idiots that are Yankee fans that say, this system isn't broken. It's definitely broken. When you can honestly tell me that the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox and some of these teams can spend significantly more money than, you know, the Twins and the Orioles and the Nats and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's about TV rights. Okay, well, why don't we put all that money in a pot, right, and everybody gets to take an equal slice out of that, and then we'll see if the Ohtani makes that kind of money and Judge makes that kind of money, right? It's not going to happen.
Well, and like in the days past when the Phillies got Pete Rose, as Don and Frank know, the deal was that they got more money from PHL 17, and that's how they covered the acquisition of Rose. And,
right.
You know, it's just a whole different world today.
Well,
I
mean, if you're going to honestly sit here and tell me that the Yankees and their TV contract affords them the opportunity to pay people more money because they have more money to spend, how is that feasible for teams like the Orioles who don't have that kind of money? Like, how is that fair?
Well, it's not fair.
Right?
It's not fair.
It's not,
so,
but it's
but
not
that's
fair.
The problem in baseball. No, it's not.
Right.
But that's the problem
not,
in baseball.
It's not something that anybody's willing to address.
No.
You know, because,
no, that's
because,
exactly right.
No, because the Yankees and the Dodgers can go over the salary limit by 30, 40, 50 million. And they just pay the
right.
penalty. They don't care. So it's not fair. You're right, because they're willing to pay that price, and they do pay that price, and that's
right.
why they get the players. I mean, that's it. I mean,
well,
Judge could have gotten more money in San Diego than he
right.
got from the Yankees. But where would you like to play? You would like to play in San Diego
sure.
with the money he's making in New York, plus all the advertising
well,
and everything else that goes with
sure.
it?
Well, I mean, look at it this way. So on the flip side of that, now what you're asking these teams to do that can't pay that kind of price is to go out and be effective in their draft picks and develop their own players. Great.
Correct.
That's right.
So the Orioles have done that. The Orioles have done that. What do you think Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman are going to command when they get their opportunity? What do you think they're worth? So now it's a dual-edged sword that says, at what point, I mean, where does this cycle stop that says, you know, how do I skin this cat? Like, well, how do I get this right?
Well,
you know,
baseball itself has to straighten the problem, man, and they're not going to do it.
And
they're just
not
going to
do it.
No, they're not going to do it.
Tell all of us, because, I mean, I know the answer, how much the Yankees are getting for the commercial on their uniform sleeve.
$20 million.
$20 million a year.
There
so there's $20 million to take care of part of the tax.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The excess. Is that right? I mean, there you go.
That
and that's just one avenue of
right.
revenue. The uniform.
I mean, you could sign a 10-year deal with somebody, a free agent, for $200 million, and that's the patch on your sleeve.
Yeah.
Well, you name the club. You name the club that doesn't. Remember, baseball, you weren't supposed to do this. You name the club that doesn't have a patch on their shoulder.
Right.
They're getting money from an outside source. Which
yeah,
team? I
don't
know of any. I don't know of
yeah,
any.
The Phillies don't have it, Don. They don't have a patch yet.
Are they,
is that right?
The Orioles.
No, yeah, they
Bryce,
don't have it.
Yeah, the Orioles are T. Rowe.
The Braves have what is it? Oscate. You know, I think it's the concrete. You know, that's in the Home Depot.
Yeah, quick reader.
Yeah, but you're right. The Dodgers have it. They have the patch.
Oh, sure. I thought every team had it. Every game I look at it, seems to me they got patches. I'm looking at the Red Sox right now. They got patches. I mean, it's just another revenue source. That's all.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, it's just like in hockey today when you watch a game. All the ads on the Dasher board on TV are not necessarily the ads that are on the Dasher board at the arena, okay, because of modern technology. And it's the same thing where you look on the mound in baseball. You can see that logo for a company that changes. That can change every inning or every half inning, you know, if they
right.
want it to. You know that. And there's just so many different avenues of revenue today versus what we're used to. And you're a lot younger than Don
sure.
and Frank and me. But, it's just totally different. And you got to live with it. But
going back to,
never
going back to Doug's point, though, you know, to stop the Yankees,
yeah.
or you're going to stop these teams from spending way, way over the ceiling because they don't care. They just pay the fine. That's all.
That's it. You got it. You got it. So
you're never gonna change it.
No.
No.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's TikTok
no
on or not.
Yeah. No. He came on and said we're up against it, so to speak.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
I didn't hear Doug.
Well,
I didn't hear Frank say that.
Yeah. No,
Frank, we out of time, Frank.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have a great
week. Okay.
God bless.
Take care, friends. Doug, thank you very much. We'll look at the FedEx this weekend, see what happens.
All right.
Take care.
Let's see what we can do.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. Men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please let them know they're there. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkap, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Chillers, Patrolman David Curtis, Sergeant Thomas Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, San Diego Officer Mike Engler, Patrolman Charlie Conda, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arnest Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Jackie Ben, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Ramon Mendez, Philadelphia Police Department, Fire Chief Corey Compierre, Buffalo County Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, though, you may be 10-7 at this time. We may be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, when the road will be up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back, may the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless, and have a great week.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemalezah ilma, sona shene vorat fed, hakuig again ma'ilma. Yeah.
night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.